Okay, let's get serious now. Here comes the Colonel.
Okay, with that bit of mirth, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. Jack Bishop is going to be back with his very exciting guest in just a minute. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over here to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set for today's query. Let me turn around the coin jar here just a minute. And, oh, spirit of the fountain.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help?
Yes, we have awakened the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. Thrown in the coins, and we've got the spirit. All right, old spirit of the fountain, here's today's query. Which of the world's seven natural wonders is located in the United States? Which of the world's seven natural wonders is located in the United States of America?
I have given you my answer. Now you may tell.
It was an easy one, wasn't it, O Spirit of the Fountain? Which of the seven, the world's seven natural wonders is located in the United States? If you said Yosemite National Park and Sugarloaf Mountain, you are absolutely wrong. Oh, it's the Grand Canyon, you ninny. Of course. All right. Here's Jack Bishop and the rest of today's program.
It's The Promise of Tomorrow on the Science News Network. Matthias Frank is with the Department of Energy's Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Dr. Frank is the group leader of the Advanced Instrumentation and Diagnostic Group in the Physics Division of the Physical and Life Sciences Directorate at Lawrence Livermore National Labs. He's currently working on the development of instrumentation for the analysis of aerosol particles, single cell, trace gases, and exhaled breath for applications in national and homeland security as well as biomedicine. Doctor, thank you so much for having us spend this time with you, for letting us spend this time with you. You know, I just gave a really long, long list of things that you are working on. This sounds like awfully important stuff to me, or am I just assuming that being a liberal arts graduate?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. Yeah, we are working on a lot of different interesting things here. So one of the projects I did want to talk about today was the use of the new X-ray free electron laser that they built at SLAC, Stanford, in Stanford in Menlo Park, mm-hmm. for the analysis of proteins.
Now, forgive me if I don't exactly understand all of this stuff, but why do we need a new form of X-ray?
Well, maybe let's start on the protein end of things.
Okay.
Proteins are very important molecules of life. They're like DNA and lipids and other molecules that make up cells, make up bodies, and they perform very important function in organisms. And we would like to understand better how they work. And in order to do so, we try to understand their molecular structure, their three-dimensional structure, because there's a close relationship between how these proteins look in three dimension and how they perform their function. And because they're molecules, they're very small, we need special tools to actually get atomic resolution, three-dimensional structure of them. And yeah, one way to get to structural information with this resolution is to use X-rays. That's mm-hmm. how X-rays come into play. Now, I should say there's all kinds of different proteins. The kind of proteins we're particularly interested in are called membrane proteins. And there's a class of protein that is particularly important because they're embedded in cellular membranes and they're involved in metabolism, they're involved in cell signaling, they're involved in transport things across the cell membrane, like channels that transport things in and out of cells, for example. And the structures of these membrane proteins have been very elusive. They're very hard to get by, and in part this had to do with how a structure of proteins is measured by X-rays. So Let's talk about X-rays for a moment. So
sure.
X-rays is, you know, some form of light with a very, very short wavelengths, and you know, there have been various X-ray methods to look at tiny things. One method that has been used in the structure analysis of proteins is called protein crystallography. And what it is, you basically shine a very bright beam of X-rays onto protein molecules, and the atoms in those molecules, they scatter X-rays in all kinds of directions with different intensities, and you record this scattered X-ray pattern, and it tells you something about where these atoms are located in a molecule and how the molecule looks. So you can, from the scattered X-ray pattern, you can infer information on the structure of these protein molecules. Now, as you probably know, X-rays are, you know, it's hard radiation. They're somewhat destructive in a sense. So when you expose protein molecules to X-rays, they get damaged. So while you're trying to image them, they get damaged, and you don't want to image the damaged structure. You want to image the intact, the functional structure of a protein. So in traditional X-ray analysis of proteins, they have used X-ray crystallography, and what it is you take a lot of identical protein molecules and you make them form a crystal, a little like a salt crystal, where you have many, many different salt molecules in a regular arrangement, and then you shine X-rays onto that crystal, so each individual molecule in this crystal is exposed only to a small fraction of the X-rays. So the radiation dose is kind of distributed over many, many different molecules, but the scatter pattern you get from the X-rays is enhanced by the presence of so many identical protein molecules. And it's called protein crystallography because it's essentially a crystal, like a salt crystal, that has a regular arrangement of these protein molecules. So far so good, and that has been, you know, it has been the workhorse of structural analysis of proteins for a long time, and has worked very well for a lot of proteins. Unfortunately, I mentioned the membrane proteins earlier. It has not worked very well for membrane proteins, and the reason is that membrane proteins, they, as the name says, they like to be embedded in a lipid membrane, a cellular membrane. They don't like to form these crystals. So people have struggled to grow protein crystals of membrane proteins that are large enough that can be used for these X-ray structural studies.
So how did you scientists get around that problem?
Well, you need a different way to crystallize them, and or you also need a different kind of X-ray source. So just to give you a number, so there's a thing called protein data bank where all these protein structures that are measured are stored, and there's nearly 100,000 structures there. I think it's above 90,000 right now. And of these 90,000, only about 400 or 500 are membrane proteins, and only about 10 or 20 of those are human membrane proteins. So the knowledge we have about membrane protein structure is very limited, and that was this bottleneck we had in crystallization. Now, along comes the X-ray free electron laser. Now, what it is it's a new kind of X-ray source that produces X-rays as they have been used before for structural analysis, but they produce pulses that are extremely short, 50 femtoseconds. So, you know, it's a very, very, very short time, and it's so short that when you expose a protein molecule or a protein crystal to that pulse, the imaging will happen. The X-rays get scattered in all these directions that you measure with a detector. So you get your scatter pattern, you get your image, and the actual destruction of the molecule, the explosion or the breaking of the chemical bonds in there, happens on a longer time scale. So it is very damaging, but the damage process is slower than the actual imaging process, and that's why people call this, you know, diffraction before destruction. So the exposure is so short that you get the image before you destroy the molecule. And that allows you to do several things. You can increase the radiation dose. Right before, you always were concerned about how much dose you expose a protein molecule to in a crystal, and you distributed it over a large number of protein molecules, so each molecule got damaged only a little bit, and the structure stayed essentially intact. Now you can do this with much smaller crystals, and you don't care that you destroy them. They destroy the molecules after the image is taken. So that allows you to work with much, much smaller crystals, microcrystals or nanocrystals. And so some proteins that do not form large enough crystals for traditional crystallography, they actually form smaller crystals that are useful for this type of crystallography. And there was some work we were involved in here at Livermore just recently. You can even go to even smaller objects like two-dimensional protein crystals. Now, what's a two-dimensional crystal? It's essentially just one one layer of protein molecules in an ordered array. So you know, it's not a like a cubic salt crystal, but it's just a single sheet of molecules. But in that sheet, the proteins are arranged in a regular pattern. So it's some kind of crystallography, but it's not a you know, not three-dimensional crystallography. So it's going down to smaller and smaller objects.
Now, is that the reason we want to study it in a two-dimensional setting, because it gets down to a smaller level by not being three-dimensional?
It makes it easier to produce. So two-dimensional protein crystallography has been done with other types of radiation sources. So it has been done in electron microscopy, for example. And you know, the convenient thing about 2D protein, two-dimensional protein crystals is you can grow them in a lipid layer that is very similar to, or chemically similar to, the cellular membrane that these membrane proteins are normally embedded in life. So you basically grow them in a natural environment, so they don't resist the two-dimensional crystallization if they're crystallized in a lipid layer, like a cell membrane, or similar to a cell membrane. So while they do not form three-dimensional crystals, they relatively easily form two-dimensional crystals, and that has been used in electron microscopy for quite some time. And you know, a lot of what we know about membrane protein structure comes from electron crystallography. But now I think we have these very bright X-ray sources that have pulses that are so intense that we get enough signal from these two-dimensional crystals. We don't need three-dimensional crystals all the time. That the hope is that we can do some of this structural measurement also with X-rays, and we can do it at room temperature, where these protein molecules are kind of in their native conformation. In electron microscopy, you know, there's also radiation damage. They usually freeze the sample, so they look at cryocooled samples, which you know, gives you structural information, but it's not at the room temperature. It's not always exactly the same as the functional state, and you can't observe motions of proteins. So sometimes when these protein molecules perform a function, there's a structural change involved in it. So something happens, a chemical reaction, the protein changes shape, and it goes from an active to an inactive state, or the other way around. And this is something you cannot observe when the sample is frozen. But with this new X-ray source, there's the hope that ultimately we'll be able to observe these processes. And yeah, what's really the dream of everyone is to produce what's called molecular movies.
That was
so
what
you
I
basically
was
image
ask
these
you
things.
About.
You image these things in different stages of this conformational change, and then you get images that you put together like the frames in a movie, and then you see something actually moving.
So we're getting down to some pretty specific and pretty finite kind of viewing of something that we have never seen before, probably, right?
Never with that resolution, I think. You know, and also, you know, what this method does, it makes accessible for X-ray structural analysis a much larger number of these membrane proteins. So when the first atomic resolution structure was solved by, you know, just maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was a very big deal, and there was very, very small numbers that that were produced over time. But just in the last year or so, there was a larger number of structures that were resolved in part at this new X-ray source at LCLS at SLAC in Stanford or in Menlo Park.
Now, I understand there are only two machines in the world that can do this. Am I right about that?
At present, that is correct. So, you know, I think there was a lot of engineering required to make these X-ray free electron lasers. So the free electron laser principle to produce radiation on this principle has been around for a while, but it for the first time was pushed into this X-ray regime, hot X-ray regime, where the wavelength is comparable to the size of atoms, which is what you need for this atomic resolution imaging. So LCLS, the linear coherent light source, was really the first machine to be able to do this, and that started operation in 2009, and the actual hard X-ray operation started about a year or so later. Has been operational since, and it works beautifully. And just short after, I think the Japanese started commissioning their first hot X-ray free electron laser. It's called SAKLA. So those are the two machines that are in existence. But I have to say, there's also others that are under construction right now. So the Europeans are building a machine in Hamburg, Germany, and the Swiss are building one. And I think they'll start operation about 2 or 3 years from now. And then there's plans in other countries to build these machines as well. So I think once the engineering has been demonstrated that this principle works, and you know, if you do it right, you can produce these hard X-rays and you can produce lasing, I think people are getting more and more interested in it.
We're spending some time today on The Promise of Tomorrow with Dr. Matthias Frank. He is with the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in Menlo Park, California.
Small correction. Sorry for interrupting. So the Lawrence Livermore National Lab is in Livermore, California.
That's right.
It's about 40 miles from Menlo Park. Menlo Park is just across the San Francisco Bay, but you know, we're spending a lot of time there doing experiments. And the Livermore Lab actually has been involved in constructing parts of LTLS. SLAC is also a Department of Energy facility. Yeah, just a small correction on the location.
And you see, I should have known that because I'm a San Franciscan, and I had a brain slip there. We started talking about genetic engineering and drug overloading, and just really how effective will this process be for us?
Well, you know, of course, it's not going to solve all of our problems, but it's a new tool that will give us some important structural information on membrane proteins and other proteins easier. And what people hope is that once you have this high resolution structural information and you understand how a protein molecule performs its function, you could possibly design drugs that inhibit that function or enhance that function. So most of these protein molecules or protein complexes have what's called an active site where really the action happens. And once you know that the shape of the molecule around that active site, you could basically design a small molecular drug that will bind to that site, will fit right in there like a lock fits into a key, and will block the site. So that might block the function if you want to block the function, or you may design something that it enhances the function. So I think it's not going to solve all of our problems, but it's an important new tool to get to structural information and functional information that we need to have to design drugs better. And now, to understand how certain drugs work and how proteins work.
Now, is this going to be a game changer as far as how researchers work in the lab?
I hate to use the word game changer. I think it's certainly a very exciting new tool, and it gives us capabilities that we didn't have before. But it's not going to do away with all the other structural methods we had before. So the regular crystallography, X-ray crystallography, will continue, and they're refining their methods as well. They're getting better and better. Electron microscopy works beautifully, so it's not going to replace these methods. It's going to be a complement to these methods. So I wouldn't say game changer, but it's certainly enabling certain types of measurements that we could not do before. So one of the very interesting things, I mentioned the room temperature before, right? And it doesn't sound very important, but I think it's actually a new capability in terms of that imaging. Before, when we imaged these membrane proteins in two-dimensional protein crystals, when they were frozen, you couldn't really observe any motion or any dynamics. Now, what we can do now, theoretically, and what we are working on to demonstrate, is that we can do this imaging at room temperature with X-rays, and we can basically bring the molecules into a certain state and then excite it maybe with a light pulse or with a chemical that's added or something, and a structural change happens. Something happens, and it changes the shape of the molecule and the function of the molecule, and we can watch that with the X-rays. So you give a little stimulus, and the molecule starts changing shape, and you take the image a certain time after that stimulus, and you do this for different what's called pump probe delay times, the different times between the stimulus and the image, and you get these frames of a molecular movie. That's really what the field is hoping for to demonstrate soon. And I think there's first evidence that this can be done. So there's some results where people take structures at different time points and they see changes. We are not at a movie yet. We are maybe at one or two or three frames of a movie, but I think the field is really trying to move into that direction.
So for those of us who go to the doctor like I did today and had an X-ray taken, how is this going to change things for me?
I don't think it's not going to change how your X-ray is going to be taken at the doctor, but it may change our understanding of health and normal, and our understanding of diseases and how to cure diseases or how to treat them with drugs. So I think the big hope is that better drugs may come out of this, or a better understanding of the function of proteins may tell us something about certain diseases, certain deficiencies, and that will give us ideas how to treat them. So I think there will be some benefits from this on the long run.
spending some time talking with Dr. Matthias Frank about this new kind of laser X-ray. I guess that's the simplest way to describe it. Now, I've got to ask you, you know, you're a graduate of the University of Munich. What took you along this path of research? How did you get into this?
Oh, that's a good question. Now, yeah, I did get my I studied physics in Munich at the Technical University, in fact, and got my PhD in physics there as well. And then I came to the United States as a postdoc, and originally this was only meant to be a 2 or 3 year assignment. And yeah, my postdoc position was at Lawrence Livermore Lab. But then I got really excited about the work here and the different things that were going on. It's a big national lab, many opportunities, many different fields. And yeah, my original work was actually on detectors for particles and gamma rays, so particle physics. And then that morphed into X-rays. And then for some time, I was actually working on biological things, biodetection, homeland security type work. And when this X-ray laser came along, there were some methods that we had developed for other types of analysis, mass spectrometry analysis, that were useful to bring sample into that X-ray beam. So we haven't really talked about how this imaging is done in practice, right? I said, you shine the X-rays onto a protein crystal, on a 2D crystal, or an object you want to image. But because that imaging is very destructive, you have to replenish the sample before the next shot, before the next image. And so I was working on some techniques that would allow to inject biological samples into the vacuum of a mass spectrometer. And some of these techniques are used to do some imaging at LCLS as well. Not for the proteins, but for other things. So they also image viruses or cells. And so some of the techniques I was working on at that time, this was about 10 years ago, are now being used to do imaging of other biological nanoparticles at LCLS. And so I got involved in this work demonstrating the potential of these X-ray field electron lasers to do biological imaging. And I ended up doing some demonstration experiments for this protein structure analysis.
And as they say, one thing led to another, right?
Right, right.
We have spent some time talking with Dr. Matthias Frank from the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory about this new form of X-ray. Dr. Frank, amongst other things, has authored or co-authored 120 articles and been published in scientific journals and books, and we want to thank you for spending this time with us on The Promise of Tomorrow, Dr. Frank.
Thank you so much for having me.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to the this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
You always want to be the best. You have to make sure you're the dumbest guy in the room. A couple of years ago, I finally accomplished that, and the dumbest guy in the room part. And now when I sit with my guys, and I listen to them talk about tech, it really sounds to me like Charlie Brown's T-shirt. Mwah, 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 mwah. So that was one of the biggest goals of my life. You got to put away ego, put away all of that stuff, and if you want to make things good, have really good people around you. My name's Nick Nascimento. I'm the chief geek at A Geek to Go, LLC.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
We live tomorrow, 'cause you know what will be there. I am waiting for you. I am waiting.